Sorry about that. So again, so we started with the question, for the benefit of the recorder, we started with the question, what exactly is the shaila about secular studies? Of course you're allowed to learn secular studies. You want to be a doctor, you got to go to medical school. You want to be a lawyer, you got to go to law school. What, you mean to tell me it's usher to be a doctor or a lawyer? That's what you're telling me? Go tell that to my mother and see how quickly she pulls me out of this yeshiva. How could that possibly be, that it's usher to be? No, of course you have to get your training. So what you suggested, and your name is... Ellie? So what Ellie suggested is, no, stop, man, it's nothing to do with profession. You have all the money in the world. You developed a patent on something years ago, and every time someone, opens a can of soda, you get 2 pennies or something, and you're gonna be living happily ever after without any problem. You just happen to enjoy studying things. So the problem might be Bittul Torah. So that's certainly one possibility, that there's an issue of Bittul Torah. Is that the issue? Meaning, is the question of whether you're allowed to learn secular studies the same as the question of, let's say, whether you're allowed to go to a ball game? Bittul Torah. You're doing something other than Torah. Or the question of whether you're allowed to take a walk. Or the question of whether you're allowed to play chess. Bittul Torah. Purely a question of, when am I allowed to stop learning? So that's certainly one element, but it can't be everything. Otherwise, this topic is not, you know, is not really about secular studies.
Historically, people have said that learning secular studies is
awesome. Yeah, I understand that. I'm asking you why people have said it's awesome. What could be bad about it? What could be terrible about it? So it could be that we're studying harmful ideas. I remember once when I was a bacher a junior madrich on the NCSY summer kollel many years ago, and they had a question answer session with Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, and someone who was a little bit younger than me, who's now a chashva rebbe and a chashva yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, happens to have a very similar name to mine, and he raised his hand and he asked Rav Aaron Lichtenstein the following question. He said, I enjoy reading the books of, and it was this person is a much smarter person than I am. He was, I believe, 15 at the time, and it was some secular philosopher that he had mentioned. Is that okay? And Rav Lichtenstein said, not only is that not valuable, that is harmful for you to read. And that was it. He said, okay, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said, I can't. You know, if you strike out with Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, you're not going to get better luck with somebody else. He's not going to be able to read. He's not going to be able to read that anymore. There are harmful things. There may be apikorsos. There may be things that are antithetical to Torah values. That is certainly a concern, not necessarily with mathematics, but with philosophy, perhaps with other areas of study. Anything else? Meaning in terms of what? In terms of time. How do you schedule your day? Meaning what should a person be doing? Not only in terms of Bittul Torah specifically, but in terms of if I want to be a Torah personality. I want to be what they call a Ben Torah. Right? A Ben Torah is someone who is engulfed in Torah, who my essence is Torah. How much of other things could I be doing and still be called a Ben Torah? Right, that is also a very critical question. So there are a number of issues. You know, let me try to formulate this as, let's say, 5 different questions. Number one, are you allowed to stop learning to earn a livelihood? Is it okay to be a doctor or a lawyer? We started by saying, davar pashut. My mother told me it's okay. It's not so pashut. It happens to be a fascinating sugya. You learn brachos taf lamed hey, you learn menachos taf tzadites, you learn the end of Maseches Kiddushin taf chavtes. You have a lot of good places to look. We're not learning any of those things right now, and that's not really our topic. But let's take that as a baseline, that let's assume that it's mutter, and let's go even further than that, assume that it's encouraged to earn a parnasa, that it's something that a person is supposed to do. Let's take the pashut reading of the Gemara in Kiddushin, that chayav adam lamed espano umnus, a father is obligated to teach his child a profession. Let's take that as a davar pashut, that if a father is obligated to teach it to a child, then a child is therefore obligated to learn it. Because we can't imagine that the Torah would say, Dad, you got to teach the kid Torah, and the kid's responsibility is to resist. I mean, you have to teach a kid an umna, it's a profession. And the kid's responsibility is to say, no way, I'm not listening. That can't be. If the father has to teach it, it must mean that the kid has to learn it. So let's take that, let's not deal with that question. Let's take it as a given that it's a great shear for a different time of learning an umnus versus learning only Torah. Amar Rabbi Nurai la'enim lamedes b'ni ella Torah. Rabbi Nurai says, I'm only going to teach my son Torah. Is that right? Is that wrong? Is it right for everybody? You know, let's leave that aside and assume that we're supposed to learn a parnasa. The question becomes, what can you study in pursuit of a parnasa? Is apikorsus important to study? My mother didn't tell me that I should be a doctor or a lawyer. My mother told me that she wants me to be a professor of comparative religion in an Ivy League university. And that was mother's milk. That's what I was raised on. That I am, you know, Dr. Pelkovitz likes to talk about family bumper stickers, that some families have, you know, Lakewood or bust, and, you know, some family, if you don't make it to Lakewood, you're a failure, and in some families, it's Harvard or bust. My bumper sticker is that if I am not a professor of comparative religions at a secular university, I am a failure. So that's going to be my parnasa. It's a good parnasa. It's a real cushy job to be a professor. You get to teach the same thing every year, so you only have to prepare once. You know, you teach a couple of classes, write a couple of articles, and, you know, and you have tenure, so you never get... It's fantastic. So that's going to be my profession. But I may have to study up your courses to get there. I'm not going to believe it. I won't believe a word of it. But I may have to study it. Is there anything wrong with that? Is it inherently usher to study up your courses? Or maybe you could argue that it's valuable to study apikorsus. What? I've only been here 1 year. I'm ready to get fired now. What? It's valuable. How could anyone make such an argument? Is that dam al hashiv? You have to know how to answer apikorus. It's important to note the Gemara. It happens to be in today's Daf Yomi. The Gemara says that you should learn a lot of Torah and dam al hashiv apikorus, meaning that it's a prerequisite. If you haven't learned a lot of Torah, then you should not be the guy that's dam al hashiv. Sometimes people are very eager to get into debates when they know nothing. And that is not a great idea, to come to a battle unarmed. A person obviously has to, but that might be a reason, and it might be the logic why some major historical figures studied things that we would probably deem apikorsus. Is that okay? Is that something we would recommend? So question number one, what can you study in the pursuit of a parnasa? Are you limited, or is it wide open, study whatever you want in the pursuit of a parnasa? Question number two, what about our system? By our system, I don't necessarily mean here in our yeshiva. I mean the system in America and in most Western civilizations, where if a person wants to get a job as a lawyer, they don't just study law. They have to go to a 4-year undergraduate program where there's an English requirement and there's a science requirement. Okay, you can take science for poets on whatever, and but still there's a science requirement and there's a perhaps a music requirement, and there are all these requirements. You have to study a whole bunch of things because you want to practice medicine. Now, it could be that in ancient times, you wanted to practice medicine, so you went to a doctor, and you studied with him whatever he was doing, whether you kept up with medicine of the time, and that was it. You studied the malacha. You wanted to be a shoemaker, you didn't have to get your half a credit of music and half a credit of phys ed in order to be a shoemaker. You learned how to make shoes. So does that change things? The fact that if you want to do many professions, you have to study a lot of other things other than the actual profession that you're going to do. Are we obligated to choose an education, or a profession rather, where the education for that profession is very focused on the profession? That way I'm not distracted by other things. Or can we say, no, let me get a broad liberal arts education, and that's all good, and that's fine, and that's that will make me a well-rounded person. Question number three, what if you just enjoy certain things? You know, you enjoy reading pop psychology, let's say. You enjoy the self-help section in the, I used to say the local bookstore, there's no such thing as the local bookstore, on the Amazon page, right? You enjoy the self-help section where you could read all of Malcolm Gladwell's, brightest ideas, and you can read all of these very interesting things about the human psyche and the latest studies about what motivates people and seven ways to be great and, all of these things. Right, so you enjoy reading these things. I happen to very much enjoy reading these. You enjoy reading these things. It has nothing to do with your parnasa, let's say. You are a technician for Dell or something, so you live in Pakistan and you do your thing answering phones, and you have it has nothing to do with your profession. But you like reading these things. Are you allowed to read these things? Or is it, as we said before, bitul Torah? Someone once told, Rabbi Mark Penner, I think, once said that he asked Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, do you mean to tell me that I'm ever supposed to put down my Gemara to pick up Shakespeare and to read Shakespeare? So what do you think the answer to that is going to be? Am I ever supposed to put down my Gemara so I can read Shakespeare? Because I enjoy Shakespeare, and I feel like it helps me. I happen to not enjoy Shakespeare. I have no idea what he's talking about. But it helps me broaden my mind. What do you think the answer is? No guesses? I would have said, if the beginning of your question... Oh, yeah? What are you going to say?
Maybe not Shakespeare, maybe something else.
Why? Too much preetzus in Shakespeare. Okay, so leaving Shakespeare out of it. Maybe something else. I would have said, if the beginning of the question is, do you mean to tell me I'm supposed to put down my Gemara in order to, unless the second half of the sentence is a mitzvah, because there's no din of osik b'talmud Torah, patim in a mitzvah, so osik mitzvah, patim in a mitzvah doesn't apply to Talmud Torah. You have four different major shittas in achronim, why? But that seems to be a fact. Unless the second half of that sentence is a mitzvah, I would say, do not put down your Gemara. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein said, yeah, on occasion, I'm telling you that you're supposed to do that. And that sounded shocking to me when I first heard it. Then let's formulate it somewhat differently. Am I allowed to play with a Rubik's Cube? You know what a Rubik's Cube is? Am I dating myself here? Am I allowed to play with it? Well, a fidget spinner is mindless, but I don't know what the... Am I allowed to play with a... one of these puzzle games. Is it mutter? What's the rabbi going to tell you? You go to your rabbi after shul and shabbos and say, am I allowed to play with the Rubik's Cube? What are the first words out of his mouth going to be? I'll tell you exactly what they're going to be. He's going to say, on Shabbos? Meaning he's going to assume you're asking a Hilchos Shabbos question. He's going to assume you can't possibly be asking, am I ever allowed to play with the Rubik's Cube? Like, why wouldn't you be allowed to play with the Rubik's Cube? Well, it uses my brain power to play with the Rubik's Cube. Shouldn't all my brain power be reserved for Gemara learning? Or for learning of Torah, of other areas of Torah? So it sounds very jarring to say, I'll shut the Gemara once in a while in order to study other things, but we all do it. Whether it's a crossword puzzle, a game of chess, whether it's, and those are the highest order things that maybe anyone in this room shuts their Gemara for, and sometimes much lower order things, to see if Aaron Judge is going to break every strikeout record, we'll sometimes shut the Gemara. So it's not as jarring, but it's even less jarring when you see the Ramah. The Ramah writes in Yerodeh and Siman Resh Mem Vav, Ve'en la'adam lilmot ki'im, a person is only allowed to learn the following, Mikra, Mishnah, Gemara, Poskim, and Mishachim Achareyam. Done. Mikra, Mishnah, Gemara, Poskim. Ubeze yikne ha'olam azeh v'ha'olam haba. That's also quite limiting. Mikra, Mishnah, Gemara, Poskim. That means your Chassidus class. That's very limiting. No? Avalo b'limut shara chachmas. But then he says, Umikol makom mutar lilmod ba'akra'i b'shar chachmos. Ubevach lo yusuf reminu. Once in a while, you can learn other things, just not up your courses. So once in a while, you want to play with your Rubik's Cube. Once in a while, you want to read, not Shakespeare, but, Malcolm Gladwell, let's say. Once in a while, you want to read some, once in a while, a little bit ba'akra'i. That shouldn't be kavua. It shouldn't be what you do. but it could be something that you do. It's not what you do, it's something that you do on the side. That's okay, says the Rambam. That is a very startling thing, because normally we have things that are mutter or things that are asr. We don't have things that are asr if you do them a lot and mutter if you do them a little. Meaning, if it's an isser, it's an isser. Why am I allowed to do it sometimes? See?
Well, what's the reason why he's saying you do it?
Right, so this we have to figure out. What he's not talking about, he's not talking about parnasa. He doesn't seem to be talking about parnasa. Although that's a discussion among the contemporary achron. That's what it sounds like he's saying. Yeah, it sounds like he's saying, because to just broaden your own mind, study it because it's enjoyable. That's what he sounds like he's saying. What about kibud avein? What if your parents tell you they really want you to study hard? Does that play a role? If a parent says, you know, parents can't dictate your entire life to you. There does come a point where you get to make your own decision. No matter how many times your parent tells you you must be a doctor, if you have no interest in medicine, it might be mutter to be a lawyer or an accountant. I don't think Jews can be anything else, but it might be mutter to be some other profession, even if your parent tells you otherwise. But what if your parent tells you, I want you to study, I want you to be well-rounded? Does that make it more of a heter to do on a more frequent basis, or do we say, no, it's irrelevant? Yeah. Correct. But here you're dealing with something that the Rama has already told us is kind of mutter to do it on occasion. Let's say I don't even want to do it on occasion. My parent tells me to do it on occasion. Right? They tell me, I'm only telling you to do it by cry. I'm not telling you to violate any yisurim. Okay, another thing to consider. And then we also have to consider, as a community, you know, on the broader level, we sometimes have to zoom out and look at Klal Yisrael and say that if Klal Yisrael were to become a group of people that values higher education, what sort of effect will that have on our ability to produce Gedolei Yisrael? Meaning, if everybody is going to college and graduate school, so are we going to be able to produce Gedolei Yisrael, and what does that do for Klal Yisrael? You know, Rav Moshe Feinstein didn't go to college and graduate school. Rav Aaron Cutler didn't go to college and graduate school. And they probably should not go to college and graduate school, because they should have spent, as they did, all their time in learning. You ever read Rav Eliyashiv's biography? My Talmidim know I like to say this. Rav Eliyashiv's biography could be summarized in a single sentence. At the age of 6, he went into a shul and he sat down and learned. At the age of 106, he finished and he died. He learned for an entire century, straight. Never stopped. And it fills in a lot of details. When his daughter was sick, he was learning. When this one was having an operation, he was learning. When they asked, when his children got married, he was learning. When it came time to learn your own kids' names, he was learning. You know, like all sorts of, he was learning. And that was the right thing, because he was Rav Eliyashiv, and the Jewish people need a Rav Eliyashiv. So if as a community we demand that everybody does this, so is there a cost to that? You know, how many Rav Soloveitchiks can there be where someone is going to be able to pursue higher levels of education and achieve doctorate levels of education and beyond, and also be a Gadol B'Torah? There aren't that many. There aren't that many that have done it. There aren't that many that seem to be cut out for it. So that's also something worth considering. Of course, we have to consider not only the risk of apikorsus. In many areas of study, as you referred to before, we have to consider the risks of arayos. You know, when the Rambam was studying, and we always point to the Rambam as this great philosopher, which he was, and someone who knew all of the chachmos, which he did, so that we forget a couple of things. One thing we forget is that he wasn't the only Rishon that studied other chachmos. Many of the Rishon were very well versed in mathematics and in science, many, and in philosophy. Many of the Rishonim. The Rambam is most prominent because he spoke about it in those terms. He spoke about philosophy as philosophy, and he did it very well, so he became quite famous for it. But it wasn't just the Rambam. We sometimes forget that. But what we also forget is that when we talk about the Rambam in secular studies, it doesn't mean that the Rambam was, reading poetry to his girlfriend under a tree in the University of Florida. Like that's not what it means. What we relate to as secular study, am I allowed to say that in front of the Aron Kodesh? What we relate to as secular study may not be what the Rambam was talking about when he was relating to secular study. We have to make sure that our terms fit the generations that we're bringing rayas from. So a couple of observations before we really get into it. It is a davar pashut, that there are many parts of Torah that one cannot understand without knowing some secular knowledge. A boy came over to me in shul this past Shabbos, a brilliant young man, a 10th grader, he's going into 10th grade, sits and learns Yomam V'Layla. And he came over to me and he said, I don't understand. They just announced the Molad in shul. Why isn't it exactly the same time as the solar eclipse? So to even understand the question, you have to have some level of knowledge of how things work up there, right? To come up with the answer, you have to have some more advanced level of knowledge. I didn't know the answer. My father-in-law is really good at this stuff. I asked him, and he gave me like a half-hour speech giving me the answer. I still don't know the answer. But essentially, Chazal were estimating. And, you know, the estimations are off by like a fifth decimal place or something. And that accounts for the difference. But you have to know in order. But you don't even have to go to a solar eclipse to know Zmanim in general, to know Erevin. How do you do Erevin without geometry? How do you learn Sukkah without geometry? There are certain areas of study. So the question is more a question of how you get there. Can you find it all through Torah? Oh, don't worry. Every time I get to an issue of astronomy in the Gemara, I'll read the art scroll footnotes. So that way I'll understand it. But how do you get to be the guy who writes the art scroll footnotes? What books do you read in order to get there? It's a davar pashut that you do have to have some other level of knowledge. So different Talmidei Hagra said different things about how the Gra achieved all of this wisdom. Some of the Talmidei Hagra said he got it all through Torah. It all came through Torah. And he figured it out through that. And that every detail can be figured out through Torah. Others say that he encouraged others to study geometry and b'toras geometry and then be able to use it to apply it to Torah. The Gra famously disagreed with the Rambam's emphasis on philosophy, and he thinks that the Rambam sometimes took philosophy and stuck it into Torah as opposed to taking his knowledge of philosophy and using it to understand what the Torah is actually saying. He thought the Rambam was too, you know, philosophia hit asu, the Gra famously said about the Rambam. So there is some dispute over there. But it's a davar pashut that some secular knowledge is necessary, and a good deal of secular knowledge in a good deal of different realms is necessary in order to learn Torah. It's also important to point out that historically there are very few institutions that taught Torah and secular studies al Taras HaKodesh under the same roof. I mean, I'm not talking about a trade, like carpentry, but like to learn philosophy to make sure that you're not being taught apikorsis and you're learning the right things. There were very few places historically that did it. The options didn't always exist. And it's also important to realize as you go through tshuvas of contemporary poskim, which we haven't done yet, even though that's our topic, to realize that not everything people believe are they willing to put in writing. And not everything that they would advise everybody are they willing to put in writing for the masses. Meaning you may have Gedolei Rosh HaYeshiva that recognize that not all their Talmidim are the same. And that some of them maybe taka should be doctors. And yet they're going to write a long tshuva about how you should not be a doctor, you should learn Torah all day. Because they hold that that's what's healthiest for the masses. You could also have the opposite. If a person belongs to an institution that is only going to get students, to inspire students, to have students in the first place, to inspire, if they pay a certain amount of lip service to secular studies, they may put in their PR material things that they don't really believe about the great value of secular studies. We see that all the time. So these are a few observations. What I want to share with you in terms of contemporary poskim are the basic approaches of Rav Elchanan Wasserman, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, because of their differences from each other. They're very interesting. Rav Elchanan Wasserman, you know, Rav Schwab Zichrono Livracha did a great tova to Klal Yisrael by asking the right people the right questions, or asking questions to certain Gedolei Yisrael. You know, there are certain ideas that were in Rav Elchanan's head, and that were in Rav Baruch Ber's head, and that were in Rav Dessler's head, that probably never would have gotten put down on paper had it not been for the fact that Rav Schwab asked the question. So sometimes you don't appreciate, you know, that it takes a lot to draw out from Gedolei Yisrael what's in their head and to share it with Klal Yisrael. They don't realize that these are things that need to be shared. So Rav Schwab sent a letter, the same letter, to a number of Gedolei Yisrael. What do you think about secular studies? And Rav Schwab, you can understand, was struggling with this issue. Anyone know a little bit about Rav Schwab? Why would he be struggling with this issue? Rav Schwab in particular? As a young man, he was struggling with this issue. What was he the Rav of? He was the Rav of which Kihila? Right, he was the Rav of the, what we call the Yekis, right? Which believed in Torah and Derech Eretz. Yet his education largely came from, he was exposed certainly to the Eastern European yeshivos, and he saw a very different style, where they didn't insist that every rabbi have a PhD in philosophy. And he wanted to know what Gedolei Yisrael felt about this. To be a Rav of a shul, do you need a PhD in philosophy, or is that a detriment? So he sent letters to Gedolei Yisrael, and it got Gedolei Yisrael talking. It's a very important thing. You know, you're exposed here to certain enormous Talmidei Chachamim. Just getting them to say certain things, getting them to talk about certain things, to talk about certain topics, is part of the job of a Talmud. You know, it's part of what I always say. How do we know most of Moshe Feinstein's shitos about Hilcha Shabbos? The majority of Moshe's practical shitos in Hilcha Shabbos. You know how we know them? Because there was a Jew in Lakewood named Rabbi Shimon Eider who wanted to write a book in English about Hilcha Shabbos. So he sent Rav Moshe a list of like 100 questions. And if you look in Ibn Moshe, or Chaim, Chelek Dalid, Rav Moshe has a 30-page tshuva answering one by one all of Rabbi Eider's questions, and that's how we know all of Rav Moshe's shitas in Hilcha Shabbos. How do we know everything Shlomo Zalman held about Hilcha Shabbos? Everything. In all Lamentes Melachos. Because there was a Jew, Rav Neuwirth, who decided he's going to write a Sefer, Shmir Shabbos Tilchasa, and he managed to convince Rav Shlomo Zalman to read the whole Sefer and make haras on the entire Sefer. So we have everything Rav Shlomo Zalman says about Hilcha Shabbos. So this is the great chesed Rav Schwab did. He drew out of these gedolim these ideas. Now, Rav Elchanan, we're not going to go through all of them, but I'm going to try to summarize what Rav Elchanan had to say. Rav Elchanan was not so supportive of secular studies, to put it mildly. He starts off by saying it will lead to api courses. Even if you're not directly studying api courses, it will lead to api courses. And it's asur l'strapos ba'atzei asherah. You're not allowed to use avodah zarah even for refuas. I don't care what sort of toelis you have. You're not allowed to study. Why did the Rambam study philosophy? The Rambam writes that he studied kedei l'shareis ha-Torah, liosol rakachos l'tabachos, to help enhance the Torah. It was a handmaid into the Torah, so it was l'shei mitzvah, and shluchei mitzvah nizakin. And says Rav Elchanan, that's great for the Rambam. But there's a rule in the sugya of shluchei mitzvah nizakin in the first parak of Pesachim. What does Gemara say? You're doing b'dikas chametz, and they're going to be choshesh, that you're doing some sort of kishuv against them, so it's a sakana. Oh, but I'm shluchei mitzvah, why do I have to worry about the sakana? So what does the Gemara say? Hecha d'shchia chazeka shayni. You can't do dangerous things and say shluchei mitzvah and nizakin. That I'm a shliach mitzvah, nothing's going to happen to me. You could do things that are not dangerous and say that nothing out of the ordinary is going to happen because I'm a shliach mitzvah. Going on an airplane is not dangerous, so give me a dollar to give at to give to tzedakah. When I get there, I'm a shliach mitzvah. But I can't jump out of a plane without a parachute. I got my dollar. Hechad shchiyah chazeka. Says Rav Elchanan, for us, it's shchiyah chazeka. Second, how many different halachos are there, primarily in Masechta Avodah Zarah, about not getting too close to Goyim? about making sure that we don't fraternize too much. Give me examples. No, off the top of your head. Okay, but that's not true, but that's not something Chazal specifically used those words. What? Yeah, drinking with Goyim, that was a direct takan of Chazal, not to drink together with Goyim. Yayinesach, Pasachum, Bishalachum, all of Machaleachum. You learn the beginning of the second Chelek of Yerdei, you have all of this stuff. And it's also that, what? That we're not going to marry their daughter. That's the Lashon Chazal used. But it doesn't just mean that we're going to say, oh, this pasta's delicious, give me your daughter. That's not the way it's going to work, but slowly we develop a relationship. So says Rav Elchanan, it's asking for trouble. Where are you going to study this? You're going to admire these brilliant professors. You're going to study together in universities with Goyim. Your study partners are all going to be Goyim. This fits directly into the hashkafa of Chazal of staying away from this kind of behavior. What about I have to learn a profession? Says Rav Elchanan, of course you have to learn a profession. Of course you have to learn a profession. There's no doubt about that. But what does it have to do with studying secular studies? You could be a carpenter. You could be a shoemaker. Jews typically wore these professions mostly because they were locked out of the other professions in many societies, but Jews did this for a long time. And then he says, and it's also Bittul Torah. We're supposed to be learning Torah. When are we supposed to learn Torah? V'gisabo yom v'layla. So the Stipler famously writes that the mitzvah, there's two mitzvahs of Talmud Torah. There's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah of yediyas haTorah, of knowing all of Torah. There's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah of learning with every spare moment that we have. Spare moment means a moment that doesn't have to be taken up with something else. We're supposed to be learning Torah. So it's Bittul Torah. L'chora, for the reason of Bittul Torah, it shouldn't apply to women. And then Rav Elchanan rails against, and probably because he knew who he was writing to, the German insistence on Rabbanim having a PhD in philosophy. And he is unhappy with it. And he says, that is one way to ensure that they won't have any serious Talmidei Chachamim. And he says, even when you do have to learn Shar Chachmos in order to earn the Parnasa, you have to do it Shalo Lishma. And when you learn Shar Chachmos Lishma, you're equating them with Torah. And he says quite sharply that people think that this is going to help with anti-Semitism. Shayu Svurim ki im yiskarvu la'goyim lishtavos lem tiktan sinasam liYisrael. They assume that if we just act more like the Goyim, they're not going to hate us as much. How well did that work in Germany? So Rav Elchanan thinks that it's not a great idea. What about Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah? He says, I'm a big fan of Derech Eretz Kadma LaTorah. Torah im Derech Eretz. Derech Eretz means Maisim Tovim. It's a Medrash in Parshas Nasa. It might mean an Umnus, but it does not mean, says Rav Elchanan, to study secular subjects. Very, very strongly against. Rav Moshe, perhaps surprisingly to many of us, I would say maybe not quite as charif in his tone as Rav Elchanan, but in terms of content of what he says, when he writes a tshuva to Rav Yossi Tender, his son-in-law's brother, who is the menahel in Yeshivas Ner Yisrael, and Rav Yosef Tender wanted to know, there's a boy graduating Ner Yisrael High School, and he wants to go to medical school, he wants to be a doctor, so can he go to college in order to study so he can become a doctor? Rav Moshe says, who told him to become a doctor? Why do you have to become a doctor? Why, he's such a balgaiva that he needs everyone to honor him, that he should become a doctor? It doesn't even dawn on him. Rav Moshe discusses, he says, probably not because he really wants to heal people. It's hard to imagine, you know, that he just likes his stomach, he just wants to, and he's going to tear himself away from Torah. And Rav Moshe says, it takes decades of study. That's not how the Rambam became a doctor. The Rambam became a doctor because he wanted to understand the human body, because understanding the human body helps him understand Torah. Memela, he was able to be a good doctor also. And he says, what? He wants to earn a good parnasa? Rav Moshe says, trust me, the real rich guys aren't the doctors and the lawyers. The real rich guys are the guys that come up with an idea. You know, the entrepreneurs who, get some sharks to invest or something. I don't know. You know, those are the guys that the guys who make little smiley face sponges. Those are the guys. Those are the guys that really make it. I can tell who's been in Eretz Yisrael for a few years. Whoever doesn't get what I'm talking about. Those are the guys who make an emotion. You just need an idea. You don't need to study so much. Emotion very, very strong. What if you're not a talented learner? Rav Moshe says, that's the godless. He says, if you're not a talented learner, what, you're not so good at Iyun? So you could do Bekiyus and you can know all of Shas and Poskim by heart and even without any real depth, and that's valuable in Torah. Or you're not so good at Bekiyus, so you could study in great depth and take advantage of how your mind does work, and that's valuable in Torah. But guess what? In medicine, if you're not good at both Bekiyus and Iyun, you'll be a terrible doctor. Because if you only know this one disease really well, but you can't diagnose anything else, you're going to miss a lot. Or if you know everything but kiyus, but you don't know how to treat anything but you, and you're going to be a terrible doctor. So he said, the shvacha cup better stay in learning. A very, very strong presentation, strongly worded presentation. So what's the other side? Didn't leave much time for it. What's the other side? Let's start with Rav Lichtenstein, and then we'll work our way back to Mori Verabi of Mordechai Willig, who's slightly more moderate, I would say. Rav Lichtenstein says it's a davar pashut that there are many reasons to value secular knowledge. First of all, practically to make a parnasa, and certainly, as we said before, we're going to take as a given that a person is obligated to earn a parnasa. Second of all, he says, there are a lot of bad ideas out there and bad philosophies that are being shared and that need to be battled, that need to be fought. And we need to be able to combat worldliness on its own turf and refute secularists by speaking their language. Because if no one speaks their language, if you get up for a debate and a person issues this impassioned plea about the value of every secular 21st century ideal that's antithetical to Torah, and your response consists of, nein, I hold not like that, and that's it, you're not going to get very far. Additionally, as an accessory to Talmud Torah, and this is something we started speaking about a little bit before, but never in the way that we couldn't even imagine the way Rav Lichtenstein meant it. I'll read you a quote from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's Zichron Levracha. Consider simply the aid we derive by elucidation or comparison from linguistics in Amos, history in Malachim, agronomy in Zra'im, physiology in Nida, chemistry in Chametz Matzah, philosophy in Yisodei HaTorah, psychology in Avodah Zarah, political theory in Sanhedrin, torts in Bava Basra. One could continue almost indefinitely. And you're thinking, agronomy? What's that? In every area of Torah, he finds an area of secular wisdom that will help you in your understanding of Torah. So is it a key of Talmud Torah when you're studying from your agronomy textbook? No, but it will help you understand Zra'im. And he also thought, and this is beyond where most were willing to go, that it can intensify a person's spiritual personality when he's exposed to morality of different kinds. That a person can be a more complete spiritual person when he's willing to learn from the best of what makes other people. That there are a lot of good people with good ideas and good things out there, and in order to learn from them, in order to be the best we that we can be, we ought to learn from them those things that are worth learning. So you'll say, okay, but I should have a very limited curriculum then, because I can't expose myself to anything negative, that anything harmful spiritually. So Wilkins said, it's just, it can't be done. Meaning you can't study Shakespeare and only get the beauty and not also get, let's say, whatever the concerns are. So you have to study in its totality and know what to reject and know what to accept. So most of the other Achronim would say, no, so don't study it. It's not worth it. Focus on things that don't run that risk, where you're not going to have to risk things that are antithetical to Torah. I think that's how most would probably argue. That we ought not risk something that is that can lead us astray. We don't necessarily have to have that kind of confidence in ourselves and in our own strength to say that no matter what I'm up against, that I'm going to confront everything, every negative idea out there, and I'm going to be strong enough to be able to withstand it. Mori v'Rabbi Rav Mordechai Willig suggests, based on the Ramah that we read before, the Ramah writes, you're allowed to learn about Kray b'shar chachmos, u'b'vach lo yusifrei minim, v'zeh nikra b'na chachamim til b'pardes. And that's what we call pardes, says the Ramah. And you're allowed to do that from time to time. But, says the Ramah, and Rav Willig points this out as a kasha on us, you're not allowed to study pardes until you filled your belly with meat and wine, which means v'uleida iser v'heter v'dinei ha-mitzvos. If I ask you a chosh mishpat question, it should be like that, on the spot. Once you're there, then you can be metayel b'pardes. So Rav Willig says it must be that we're samech on the gra. The gra holds til b'pardes doesn't mean shar chachmas. The gra holds til b'pardes refers to Kabbalah. So we're samech on the gra in our not learning of Kabbalah, and it's only Kabbalah that we have to wait till we're mili kreis of basa v'yayim. But maybe other areas of study, natural sciences. The Rambam is explicit about the value of natural sciences, and that's the opinion of most gedolim, that there is great value in understanding the natural sciences. History, Shulchan Aruch is explicit in Siman Shin Zayin, not to learn it on Shabbos, or during the week because of Moshe Vleitzim, but later Achronim say, not that way. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, you have to appear educated in front of others and know how to communicate. The Chazon Ish writes in Emunah Bitachon, you need to learn from history so it won't repeat itself. Certainly to understand Jewish history is a mitzvah. Languages, Nadav Yehuda writes, that it's necessary to speak the native language of the land in order to be able to interact properly in the culture that you live. If you live in Eretz Yisrael, you're much better off in that regard. But we have to be very careful of heresy. And based on this, we could draw some basic conclusions. To study on a secular college campus where one is exposed not only to ideas that are foreign to Torah, but to a lifestyle that's foreign to Torah, one would be very hard-pressed to explain why that would be encouraged, why we would ever want to encourage someone to do that, to live in a secular college, in a dorm atmosphere, a commuter college maybe, but to live in, very hard-pressed. Then there are places that you may have heard of that combine a Torah education and a secular education under one roof. But there are different emphases. Some places believe that you have to offer an unfiltered secular education and a high-level Torah education. Unfiltered secular education because, like Rav Lichtenstein held, you're not going to really get it unless you get it in totality, and then you hopefully, your Torah knowledge will and your Torah education and your Shemayim will be enough for you to sort out what you should take in and what you should not. But then there are other places that also have secular education and Torah education under one roof that will work very hard not to expose you to things that are antithetical to Torah. And we'll say, look, we're going to give you a secular education, but we're not willing to risk giving you things that are against the Torah. And if it goes to the Rosh Yeshiva, and the Rosh Yeshiva says, I'm not comfortable that being taught under this roof, it is out. And that certainly would fit the Rav Willig model, let's say. And then, of course, there are many, many yeshivas that want nothing to do. Our job, there will be Jewish doctors, there will be Jewish lawyers, as long as there are Jewish mothers. Our job is to teach people Torah, to inspire people to become Gedolei Torah. Once when I was teaching in DRS, we took our boys on a field trip to different yeshivas. And one of the yeshivas that we went to, the Rosh Yeshiva got up. And to inspire our 11th grade modern Orthodox students, he said, "The world doesn't need doctors and lawyers, we need Talmidei Chachamim. If your fathers are doctors and lawyers and they're learning a Daf Yomi, they're not doing enough. We need Talmidei Chachamim." And that was the last time we were ever allowed to go visit that yeshiva. But that's the philosophy of many yeshivas. Try to create as many Talmidei Chachamim as you can at the highest caliber that you possibly can. And people will figure it out. How to make a parnasa? Jews are clever. They'll figure something out. Hopefully whatever they figure out will be legal, and they'll figure something out. These are some of the perspectives on the value of secular study. I'm certainly biased in a certain direction over here, but I tried just to give you a broad perspective of the different approaches. I wish you all tremendous hatzlacha this year and beyond, and remember always that the Ikar is Talmud Torah, the Ikar is Yirat Shamayim and Avodas Hashem, and in all of the secular studies that you're going to study, just make sure that it's all done, Al Taras HaKodesh, and it's done with the ultimate goal of serving the Ribono Shel Olam.